have some expense, but just
leave aside. I'll do that.
Arvid's on her way here.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Got this.
I heard that.
Right, but, no, but I mean, if this is a prevention, I mean, I would like to know that.
I don't have much of a whip to crack with these guys.
Hey, you.
Great.
Well, consider the alternative.
Oh, we have a quorum, right?
Yeah. Not much, but something. We can't? All right. We can start. Oh, my goodness, really.
12-12-12.
I know. Isn't that great?
It's hard to believe.
Is 12 supposed to end today?
No, it's 12-21.
It's a new beginning.
A new beginning.
Surviving danger.
All right. I think we'll try to get started here. So, good morning and welcome to our December 12th, 2012 meeting. Kind of exciting there, and it's a little appropriate for the holiday season here. And as you know, November 28th at 3 p.m., Governor Jerry Brown reappointed me. And I only had a couple hours left before I think I would have been in history, but there's always a day to that will happen, but I appreciate, and so I thought I'd share a quick bit of history with you. 16 years ago, we used to give Ray four quarters to park the car across town here, and now I think it's 56 quarters if we had to do quarters, but nobody takes quarters anymore. But kind of more interesting is the good daughter my wife is with her mom. She's been going through her Christmas card list that great-grandma and grandpas used to send out, 400 Christmas cards. So my wife is eliminating them every year the last few years because they're dead, those people. So she said, Ma, why would you send this card out anymore? So during her research, going through this list of files that we all have, hopefully, grandmas and great-grandma and grandpas that have a lot of crap in their houses or wherever they live, she comes across this news article that says, Wilson appointee to regional water board faces storm. Can you imagine that? It said the activists were after John Mueller because he could potentially benefit from his influence as a water board member. Man, oh, man, what the hell happened to my influence? But
what happened to the benefits?
So, because I was going to be approving thousands of homes on the coast side. Well, I think I looked at the records recently. I don't think we've approved 100 homes on the coast side in the last 16 years. But more importantly, I think this is very exciting. This was from 1966. Only great-grandmas would have that from 1966. I'm going to try to have it framed because this other quote in here I really like, and it was from the appointments director of the Senate Rules Committee about John Mueller. We don't see that this man has done anything wrong. He has an impeccable history. So I thought my wife would appreciate that if I had it on the refrigerator every day. I don't think she would agree with that statement. But
I know exactly what she would say. She would say, that was then, and this is now.
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of cute, really and truly. So we always threaten great-grandma someday when they go to the big farm in the sky, we're going to get a dumpster and just throw all that crap away. I'm glad we found it. So welcome and happy holiday time here. And at this time, we better have roll call before I get in any more trouble. On the way.
Board Member Kissinger.
Here.
Board Member McGrath.
Here.
Vice Chair Yost.
Here.
Chair Hollis.
Here. Thank you. Introductions. We have a number of visitors.
We
today.
Have no staff introductions, but I would like to a couple of things. First, before making some introductions, I'd like to note that this month we have two significant retirements. One, Bonnie Williams from our administrative staff is retiring after nearly 40 years working for us since 1973. As she was cleaning out her cubicle, I said, are you going to have a garage sale? Because much like you were just referring to, the things that accumulate over 40 years. And Mary Tryon is retiring this month after being with us since 1998, and she's certainly, I think, done a great job keeping these meetings going for the last 14 years. So, Mary, we're definitely gonna miss you. So,
thank you, Mary.
Also, we're pleased to have Rob Eagle, who's head of the Office of Legislative Affairs at the State Water Board. He's with us today and has brought a number of his staff along to see Regional Water Board in action. So, Rob, would you like to say hello and introduce your staff?
Come on up to the podium, please, Rob. And then Tam will get you next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm pleased to be here today. And I have brought a number of my staff. Gil Martinez, Assistant Chief of the Office of Legislative Affairs. Charles Delgado. Baldy Tomashiro. Kyle Harris and Angela Marin. And as Bruce said, we're here just to observe the regional board and then Bruce and your staff have graciously agreed to spend a little time talking to us about the priorities of the regional board and key issues in this area, as well as to take us out and see some sites. So appreciate you hosting us. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you all for your hard work on behalf of all of the regional boards and the state board. We all know the government process is very tedious at times, but very, very important to all of us, so thank you. Comments. All right, Ms. Dam, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and let me also add my congratulations to you on your reappointment, and thanking you for another tour of duty, as it were. Your leadership, your experience, and everything that you've brought to this regional board has been truly, truly invaluable. And so thank you once again for performing this labor of love for all the people in this region. And also warm welcome to Member Kissinger. Look forward to seeing more of you and getting to know you a little bit more. And thank you also for volunteering your time and your effort in helping this regional board tackle the many incredibly difficult and challenging issues that that you have. Happy holidays. It's the end of the year. I think we had a good 2012. And thank you to the board members who participated in the recent Water Quality Coordinating Committee, WQCC, meeting. I thought it was very productive, and I'm hopeful that there will be some additional work out of that meeting in terms of the issues that we discussed. I know that state board staff, working with regional board staff, is putting together our annual accomplishments and priorities report for 2012, which I am told should be out by the end of the year. So I look forward to taking a look at that and seeing, especially with respect to our priorities, how they align and how we can, you know, best leverage all of each other's resources and expertise towards accomplishing those priorities together. With respect to things that are on the state board's plate, I will say that personally, there were quite a number of things that I had hoped would be accomplished by the end of the year. And as you know, these things happen when you have complicated issues and a lot of stakeholder engagement and interest, which is a good thing because we never want to do things without stakeholder engagement. But what that means, obviously, is that things get more complicated. So for us, a couple of things that have now sort of been moved into early 2013 that I was hoping to accomplish by the end of the year include obviously our Bay Delta activities, which has been a high priority for us, our Phase 1 activities in updating our water quality control plan for the Delta, included mainly looking at flow objectives for the San Joaquin River as well as salinity standards for the Southern Delta to protect agricultural uses. We were hoping to have that accomplished by now, but the new time frame has, at least staff is working towards releasing the draft objectives, the draft program of implementation, and the draft SED substitute environmental document by the end of the year. So they're furiously working, and those materials should be released just in time for Christmas and New Year presents this year. And our goal is to then hold a workshop slash hearing on it in March sometime and projecting a board consideration for adoption in, I believe it's May. At least that's the game plan anyway. Our Phase 2 Bay Delta efforts, which includes flows for the rest of the Delta, including exports as well as Delta outflow objectives. We started the effort in 2012. We just completed a series of very technical yet very helpful workshops. We're awaiting a report from our facilitator, contracted facilitator, in terms of the information presented at the workshop, where the potential areas of agreements are with respect to the scientific information that was provided, and perhaps perhaps even more abundant, the areas of disagreement and where we go from there. It is still our goal, though, to accomplish the, I guess, what is the directive that is in the draft Delta plan from the Delta Stewardship Council. That draft plan calls for the State Water Board to adopt and implement Delta objectives by June of 2014. That does not give us a lot of time, especially the implement part. It depends on, I guess, how you interpret implement. If you interpret it as actually completing the Delta rights, the water rights decision as well, that could be extremely difficult. So we'll do our best, and we'll see where we go with that. A couple of non-Delta-related issue, which has been on my radar screen, which slipped a little bit, include the toxicity plan. Actually, it was a toxicity policy, which now staff is revising into a plan. And because of that and other legal concerns, that's taken a little bit longer than I would like. But the projection still has that being released in January sometime with board consideration in March. Also, our trash amendments. You know, the state board staff has been working for a long time on the statewide trash policy, working with a public advisory group. And with their input, staff is anticipating releasing a draft SED and draft amendments in February, with a hearing or workshop scheduled for May. Desalination is another topic that we've been working on, and staff is projecting releasing a draft SED and the desalination amendments also in March, with workshops probably in the summertime. And all of these will be at least planned for board consideration and adoption in the fall of 2013. I just had a brief discussion with your assistant, Executive Officer Diane White, on wetlands. that one has slipped tremendously, and I'm not sure why that is. So I will be definitely be following up with Tom Howard and my staff. The latest projection I received from them earlier this week calls for a release of a draft in May, which is a lot further away than I had thought for just phase one of the wetlands effort that we have. So I would need to follow up on that one. And then finally, the board has a requirement to report back to the legislature on nitrate, nitrate in groundwater. And staff is still projecting that we'll have a draft report and sometime in February, March, with the recommendations to the legislature in response to the report that UC Davis released on nitrate. And then finally, I believe it was 2 WQCC ago when we had a discussion on groundwater and a groundwater strategic work plan. That input has been utilized by staff to draft a groundwater strategic work plan for all of us in terms of looking at groundwater contamination as well as potentially groundwater management here in California. And staff is projecting a release of that draft work plan also in the spring with potential board consideration and adoption in July of 2013. So, as we wrap up 2012, I can't help but think that we still have a lot of work ahead of us in 2013. And this doesn't even mention all the stormwater stuff that we have going on, as well as other activities that I know is going on at the Regional Water Board. So, as always, I think, we, especially you at the Regional Water Board level, I really, really appreciate and commend you for the dedication that you bring to this volunteer position, which is so significant, which requires so much investment of time and energy and deliberation into these important decisions. So once again, I end the year with thanking you and wishing you a happy holidays and also a welcome to the new board member here as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Tam. Any questions of our state board member?
And I have to let you know that I had a quick get-together with your former colleague, Dr. Gary Wolf, last night, and he asked me to extend his regards to all of you and how much he misses you and misses working with you. Now, your former colleague, Stephen Moore, didn't say any such things to me, so he must not be missing you. No, seriously, I adore having Stephen on my board. He's such a great engineer, and it's wonderful to have him there, and thank you so much for being so gracious in allowing him to move on.
I don't know if you're old enough to remember Dan Hicks, but he did have a song that seems a little appropriate to Steve. You know, how can I miss you when you won't go away? it is good to have Steve still around, in all seriousness.
No, I will say that I have to fight him to keep you. So I think between Stephen and myself, you'll be seeing one of us at your board meetings, because it's nice to have him to tag team with. I tagged him with him on the North Coast Regional Board as well, since I've been the liaison to that board for so long. It's hard to let go of your regional boards when new members come along.
Thank you, Tim. And I believe that concludes introductions, and thank you all for coming through. Public forum, I have zero cards at this time. So we will move on to item three. The minutes, and then I believe they were
right. We're continuing those to next month, and this, with Mary's retirement, this is obviously a high priority for her replacement to catch up on the minutes. So that's something we'll be working on.
For sure, we have to do that. Go ahead. Sure.
Can you explain to us why some of the audio for some of the meetings is available on the website and not others of the meetings? I mean, you can go to... Is this a surprise? You can go to the website and hear the entire meeting and everything that you said, so buyer beware.
I actually...
But it's available for some meetings and not others.
It's, I noticed that recently, and I was surprised about that. I think what has happened with that is the audio is only available for the meetings in which the minutes are also available and published and approved by you on that, which I think that's just because I just noticed that because we've been organizing the minutes. So I just actually had made a note earlier that what I think we should do is go ahead and just get all of those audios posted, regardless whether the written minutes are there, because it seems actually more important if the written minutes aren't there to have the audio there. So I think that was an oversight just because of our processing technique of dually posting those at the same time. So as Bruce mentioned, we're doing a lot of organization now with looking for Mary's replacement, and I think we'll just move ahead and get all those set up and posted.
Thank you. That would be a good idea.
And you'll comment about that in your executive officer's report also, Bruce?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. So moving on to item four, the chairs and board members' executive officer's report. Just briefly, we had a chair's call last week and primarily discussing issues with new board members coming on board with the regions and some being dropped off here and there. So there's a little bit of new coordination going on there. And the state is going to invite the chairs on March 25th, 2013, up to Sacramento to try to start to do a little bit of planning on hopefully where we're all headed for in 2013. And then we did have our new contact list out there, and we can keep that privately filed to ourselves there. So I think it's pretty fairly accurate. And again, like all active and busy people, we're still trying to find that wonderful date in 2013 to have a little offsite so we could do some more continuing strategic planning work and business. And a little review of the executive officer. So we're going to continue to find a date in 2018 or 2019. I'm sure that'll be time. But we'll keep working with each other. And I guarantee you we'll have
Is that actually a commitment on you to do even another term?
No. No. When the governor's office talked to me, I go, you know what? I'm getting old like Jerry. You know, I'll give you a little more energy, but then I'm done. The hell with it. I'm over. I'm out of here. Hopefully we've saved the bay by then. And finally, I think looking forward to 2013, if I may ask a couple board members to serve on a nominating committee for the chair and vice chair for 2013. So I'm kind of looking to my right now. So board member McGrath, kind of coordinate that and maybe Margaret, would you be interested to assist him in that process? And Jim, any comment on that?
I just think it's important to talk about leadership and what it means and make sure that we're all on the same page as that and look at where we've been and where we're going. So I'd be happy to do so.
Thank you. And I believe legal counsel, they have to stick between give them a little guidance there. I want to be in another paper
yeah.
16 years.
So the two of you can meet without any Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act problems, but you cannot conduct a series of communications with other board meetings to discuss, deliberate, or take action. So basically you kind of are on your own in terms of
It's an important reminder. Is it appropriate to ask other board members what they think the profile of a leader should be, as long as that communication and the results end up in some manner in available to the public? I mean, well, I guess let me rephrase. I would like to solicit the opinions or what people think is the leadership profile of all the board members, if possible, but I would not.
Under a strict interpretation of the Bagley-Keene, I think that would entail discussing a matter that's, you know, part of the board's business.
Okay.
In terms of process, and when we go to nominate and ask the nominees, is that an issue or is that?
So the way I see this playing out is as, you know, the nominating committee, you two can confer with each other as to how to proceed, but to pull other board members or have discussions, serial discussions, that would be, you know, in effect a serial meeting.
So we're not allowed to ask someone, whoever we want to nominate, whether they're interested or not beforehand.
Pardon me?
Is it two or is it three?
It's two board members, and you can freely, but if it's three, then it would have to be, you know, a public process where it has to be noticed in a, as a meeting. Okay. I can certainly work with you offline to figure out how best to proceed with this.
Again, use your best judgment.
No, it's important to understand the ground rules, and if we want to solicit opinions, we will do it in a manner that complies with the Open Meeting Act.
Right, and remember the basic process aspect here is that at the first board meeting of every year, the board must consider board chair and vice chair. So that's why we're queuing this up now.
If I may, again, this isn't agendized today, but certainly you can, you know, talk openly right now as to, you know, what the qualities of a board chair or vice chair should be.
Shall we?
Not to put you on the spot.
I mean, if we could take over for the chair just a little bit, and I think Margaret and I would at the moment just like to listen. So, Bill, if you had a chance to give any thought to what
in the 2 minutes since it's been added to the agenda,
or we could ask probably many years to think about it and give you a chance to have some thoughts.
I'll defer to her. I'm gonna take a walk anyway, so you guys discuss it.
I'll just give you some more time by talking some more and saying that this is just informal discussion. There's no action here, and it's not like formally added to the agenda. This is just part of your, you know, public discussions.
And it's not about who should be the chair. It's a matter of what a board chairman in this organization ideally should do. So, Harry?
Well, the things that I would have to say would come as no surprise to anyone. I think that this board has a distinguished track record of having leadership and full board engagement in a manner that is ethical, respectful of everyone who comes before us, thoughtful. And much of that we should honor the leadership with a lot of the credit for that, and I would like to see that continued. The leadership, the chair's duties particularly, have a great deal of time commitment to them that is not obvious to everyone else, and certainly was not obvious to me as a new board member for for quite a long time. So, you know, that the ability and the willingness to do that obviously, you know, goes without saying. But I do think it's the public face, the chair is the public face of the board, and we would be We will be lucky if we can keep the same graciousness, I think, that we're known for. Again, no surprise.
Bill, did you have some thoughts?
No, not beyond what you just said. I think that what Derry said makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the capacity of the chairman to listen empathetically is the greatest art. All right. We'll go back to the rest of the agenda.
Thank you. And we will move on to other board members' reports. So, Vice Chair, and then we'll go down the road here.
Yeah, I have no report for this month.
Yeah, but you've been watching online what our meetings are. You can run the darn thing.
And you don't want to hear.
But she's doing that as she's working out and swimming. She has the iPod phone-y's thing in the swimming pool, probably. Board member, Messenger?
None for me.
Thank you. And board member Margaret here?
I just wanted to report from the last meeting, which I think I know I stepped into a conversation that's been ongoing, but in regards to plastic bags, our city, Mountain View, passed an ban ordinance last week, and our county, Santa Clara County, is moving towards, I think we'll have about 12 out of our 15 cities with some kind of ordinance soon. And so I didn't quite get what the discussion was here, but I do look forward to that discussion into the future and you know, getting more guidelines from the regional board and the state board as to what the benefits of this will be. So just wanted to mention that.
Board Member Jim?
I'm going to take a couple minutes to tell a story that I think is relevant to kind of plugging away and eventually having things happen. During the period between the last two board meetings, I was invited to over to the NRDC to attend a celebration of 20 years of since the passing of the Central Valley Improvement Act project, which was a priority for them. And they recognized the Port of Oakland's role, which I had almost forgotten. And it's kind of interesting, so I'll tell a little story behind it. I started at the Port of Oakland in 1990. And there was a major problem with dredging, and the Port of Oakland was trying to dredge the inner harbor to 35 feet to take care of our number one business entity, American President Lines. But it's very difficult for a local government entity to pursue a federal project. So we went back to Washington in 1992 to say, you know, we've tried. There's nothing immediately apparent. EPA is working on an ocean disposal site, which will be a solution. So we're there in Washington with kind of a cast of people. It was before Nancy Pelosi was speaker, but she was certainly the representative, and Dellums was there. And they had just fired the executive director of the Port of Oakland, so I was there, but I was kind of on tenterhooks because there were real ammunition flying around. And so they announced that we wouldn't be pursuing this, and Gene Penamani, who was senior vice president of APL, stood up and said, "We can't wait. We'll leave Oakland." And so the congressional delegation out there says, "You have to do something." And I go, "Oh, my God, my life is over. You know, this will never survive a litigation test. I've come with credibility and the like." And about 2 weeks later, I got a call from Laura King of NRDC. And Laura said, "One of the priorities for the environmental community is passage of the Central Valley Improvement Act project, and it's a higher priority than dredging or even disposal at Alcatraz. So maybe we can work something out. Would the Port of Oakland be willing to support that?" Well, I said, I understand that the alliances around water policy are changing, and the urban, you know, Southern California versus Northern California may be less important over time than urban versus rural and wise use. I'll see what I can do. And the traditional support from the Port of Oakland was the agricultural community, who wanted to oppose the bill. But there were enough votes that were forthcoming in the port to join a number of different entities, the City of San Francisco, the Port of San Francisco, and support the bill. And it came into being. So the kind of the last two bits of that, the name escapes me at the moment, but there was Cynthia Kohler was kind of a thorn in my side. She was with the National Heritage Association. And disposal of 300,000 cubic yards of material at Alcatraz would not have survived litigation challenge. And the Natural Heritage Institute was determined to do it until the possibility of a deal came along. So here is someone who has been on my case. My last vision of her on this project was up on the bridge of the dredging ship taking the material to Alcatraz with a big smile on her face. The other kind of interest to me, I didn't kind of understand the dynamics of legislation and how it comes together. I was asked to see if I could provide Port of Oakland support, and I didn't have much of a deeper understanding, but it passes, and the next step is whether or not it's going to be signed by Pete Wilson, and Senator Seymour is urging in a very strong way that it be vetoed. And the business roundtable weighs in on the side of passing the bill and signing the bill. So And I wasn't close to any of these events. I mean, I had my little chance at my inch of rope, and I pulled it for a little while. But I got invited to a party to celebrate the signing of the bill by Sonny McPeak, and it was at the Transamerica Pyramid. And, you know, if you know the building, there's those big ears. There's a giant conference room up there. So I get up there, and who's who was all present in Business Roundtable, including the vice chairman of the Port of Oakland Board of Port Commissioners. And I kind of said, Business Roundtable. Oh, I kind of get it. So it's interesting to just do your work the best you can, but it's also interesting to not kind of sneer at deals when they come along, because you can advance mutual interests. And you won't always understand the politics, but if you get a chance to pull the rope, pull it. Other people are pulling too. So it was nice to see that 20 years on, and Tam reminded me of it when she talked about flow from the San Joaquin, because one of the featured elements of this was a little video of salmon in the San Joaquin River.
Thank you, board member. I was thinking about reading a paper yesterday morning about my appointment to the regional board. Now that you mentioned Oakland, I sure as hell would have rather gone on the Port of Oakland board for $200,000+ a year. How do you get those appointments? Next time in life. Jim, you're due for one of those.
We'll have that discussion off
the line. Executive officer?
I think that goes into the category of be careful what you ask for. I do have a few items. In the this month's executive officer's report, a couple things worth noting. First, the Peyton Slough project up in Martinez is significant, that I think, from a couple of aspects. One, this was a very significant cleanup that was performed by Rhodia some years ago, and that we continue to revisit, and it's an example of adaptive management. Here it was significant in that as part of the cleanup, they actually relocated the slough, and that was a drastic consideration at the time. It's still fairly significant, and as they're finding, there's still some concerns over how much flow is getting where in the marsh. How can we tweak this? And so it's appropriate that there's ongoing adaptive management and review. It's not just something saying, okay, we moved the slough, we did the cleanup, we're done, we're walking away. That they, as a good corporate citizen, are recognizing they have to be involved with this. There are a number of moving parts because the Mosquito Abatement District is involved and concerned over this. Mount View Sanitary District has its flow coming through there. There's a constriction at Waterfront Road. We're actually trying to see how we can mobilize funding to help Union Pacific Railroad rebuild their trestle there to allow improved flow into McNabney Marsh. And so this is a significant area that we're still going to be pushing and working on, but it's appropriate that we call out Rhodia for all of its work that it's done, both on the cleanup but the continuing adaptive management. And Lindsay Whalen of our staff has been doing a good job tracking this and keeping it moving. Also, I wanted to highlight the two items on Department of Defense site cleanups, Hunter's Point and Mare Island. Usually when you think of cleanups, you think of cleanups in soil and potentially groundwater. Here the focus, as reported, is more on land disposal activities, historic land disposal, landfills on site where they're close to the bay or waters, close to wetlands. And so both of these items speak to the fact that trying to balance what's appropriate for cleanup of wetlands, this is obviously controversial when you have wastes in near shore areas, and especially in Hunter's Point, there was a lot of citizen push to say, we need to remove the whole landfill. Well, from a practicality perspective, that really didn't work. But coming up with a solution where it can be fixed in place and still then come up with a restoration of the wetlands adjacent and plug this into the Candlestick State Park adjacent to that, where there's also wetland restoration ongoing, I think it's a win-win for everybody. So we'll keep coming back to you, reporting on the progress that is being made at these sites. along the lines of wetlands. You may recall, those of you who were here, that in last June, we had a presentation by Sam Shuckett of the Coastal Conservancy on the San Francisco Bay Restoration Authority. And I want to note that last month, the Restoration Authority appointed me to the advisory committee for the authority to work with them and other folks on trying to achieve the goal of the legislation that established the Restoration Authority in 2008 with the goal of establishing and preserving approximately 100,000 acres of wetlands around the bay margin. At this point, the metrics are that approximately 40,000 of that 100,000 has been preserved and is under restoration, predominantly at the South Bay Salt Pond and to a certain degree at the North Bay Salt Pond area. So good progress is being made, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and the authority is considering having a ballot measure in fall of 2014. That would be a region-wide ballot measure to establish a $20 per parcel annual fee that would go into a pot to be used for acquiring and restoring wetlands. And so you're going to be hearing more about this, and I'll report back to you on how this plays out, because I think it speaks both to the historic need that we've looked at, the benefits of wetlands not only for habitat, but from the aspect that they provide a filter for what's coming off the land before it reaches the bay. I think more and more we're looking at the other side, that wetlands can provide protection against sea level rise, against storm surge, and that there are benefits for protecting our infrastructure, protecting our land uses that are close to the bay margin. And so something like the further establishment up to 100,000 acres can be a very significant benefit for the bay region. So I'll keep you plugged in on that. A couple of coming things, as we noted, with Mary's retirement, we obviously are needing to hire replacement. That's a challenge because in her classification, there are no people currently on the list for Oakland. And so we're working with Sacramento on can we get access to other lists. But that does mean that over the next month or two, we're going to have to work with our administrative staff to cover the functions that Mary's been covering. And so as part of that, you may be getting contacted from some of my staff at various times to catch up on things, but we'll try to see how we can keep that going smoothly and seamlessly as we move forward. Another coming attraction is that in January, I've invited Lori Okun of Office of Chief Counsel to come speak to you about ex parte communication rules and the changes in those rules that come out of the State Board, Senate Bill 965 that becomes effective January 1. And so there was some discussion at WQCC that Jim and I sat in on. There are some complexities here about how the changes apply. This will be significant as we go forward in the spring when we'll be asking you to consider a waiver of waste discharge requirements for vineyards. And so this is something that will come under these new ex parte rules. So Lori will be here in January to cover that. That's what I've got for now.
Very good. Jim?
Bruce, I did have a question on the proposed settlements list. There's a fairly substantial chunk for Caltrans for Phil in Arroyo Los Positos in Livermore. And can you talk a little bit about kind of how that came about? I mean, it's always better to prevent things than to punish somebody afterwards. A little bit of the background and whether or not there was much significance ecologically to the activity. And more important, what Caltrans has done to make sure it never happens again. That's my real interest.
I'll defer to Tom as head of the prosecution team. Now that the item's been settled, we don't have to separate the functions, but Tom can get back.
You might follow up with the 84 one, too, with the water down there on Woodside. Kind of curious about that one, too.
Yeah, well, how do I try to keep this simple? for the Livermore Valley case, we discovered by inspecting the construction site, it's a major intersection improvement and changing the bridge over the creek. We discovered that Caltrans sort of unilaterally had put in temporary fill for equipment to have access into the creek during the dry weather period for construction purposes. And they kind of liberally interpreted what they were allowed to do vis-a-vis their water quality certification and associated conditions. And we called attention that this was not explicitly called out, and it essentially was an illegal fill, albeit temporary. The good news is we didn't observe any ecological damage. When they were done, they basically put gravel down on the dry creek bed for construction purposes, sort of access ramp along the bank into the creek bed. They cleared it all up. So all said and done, it was we fortunately didn't see any long-term damage, but we said this was beyond tolerance. So we resolved through a settlement in terms of the illegal fill, and part of it, we've got a commitment on their part that they will not, at least from here on out, they will be much more vigilant and clear with us in terms of these type of temporary things that happen at small scale sometimes, and this was a big scale thing regarding what goes on at these large construction projects. So a big part of what we've been progressively improving our communication channels with Caltrans. I mean, I actually have the head of environment confers with me now on a regular basis to get a heads up. Are there any issues? And then so we call attention to these things and say, fix it here, but more importantly, keep it from happening anywhere else.
$31,000 is enough to focus the attention.
Yeah, and it's just the bad PR. They obviously don't like either. Yeah, and then other type of things we discover, like the Bear Gulch one. It was an emergency construction type activity going on of some sort. I forget the exact nature of the job, but the contractors busted through potable water pipe with elevated chlorine, and there was an associated fish kill, et cetera. So it was again.
So it was a broken pipe. It wasn't like they were discharging.
And okay. So another area where we got their, you know, beyond their normal rate, you know, they're paying attention to other utility issues, of course, whenever you dig, looking for gas and other pipelines. So we got their attention there as well. So.
Very good. Thank you. So at this time, we have no other further comments. We can move on to item five.
Right. We should do the swearing in at this point.
Oh, I apologize. And it's here somewhere.
You don't have it memorized.
No, I don't have it memorized. Thank you. Okay. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed. Following the completion of direct testimony by all persons, each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rule of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issue. All board files, exhibit, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify at this hearing will now rise or raise their hand, please. Do you promise to tell the truth?
So do.
Thank you.
Item five is consideration of uncontested items. We have two items on that list, and I'm not aware of any cards that have come in for those. We do not have any supplementals, so I would note that especially the item for Sewerage Agency of Southern Marin is significant in that a few years back they did have a number of spills, and since that time they've done very significant work on their plant and their collection system, and so I think they should be commended for the work they've done, and there's still a number of tasks to do, but they've made good progress, and I think that's reflected in the item in front of you. With that, I'd recommend adoption of the uncontested items calendar.
I would move approval. Second. And I would add to Bruce's comment, I mean, this is not atypical of this level of staff work we see. The Southern Marin problems in the progress are indeed tremendously significant, and for them to arrive at this board meeting on the uncontested calendar after a rather tortured early history is a remark both to the quality of the staff work and the cooperation of the discharger. And I deeply appreciate both of those things.
And further discussion has been moved in second. Discussion, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Yeah, I did note in the response to discharger comments that the staff, I thought, did a very nice job of reiterating the requirement for developing a flow-based rate structure. Mm-hmm. We had a great deal of board and staff discussion about this at one of the earlier times when we were dealing with the issues around this discharger's performance, and I appreciate the staff following up on that.
Thank you, and again, the comments, as we've said over the past, there's times where we penalize and make difficult decisions, and there's other times we'll come back and give you a plaque someday. So thank you. Thank you very much for coming this far, because it's always challenging in joint powers authorities. And let me tell you, I was at a meeting Monday night till 10 o'clock, and I don't know who ever thought of those JPAs, you fancy lawyers around here, but boy, they are punishing, especially when the votes are 4-4. Who would ever be wanting to serve on a board that's 4-4, let me tell you. But congratulations, staff, to get this through with the discharger. And so we'll all in favor of the consent calendar?
Aye.
Aye.
So ordered. So thank you.
Item 6 is consideration of reissuance of the watershed-wide permit for mercury and PCBs from municipal and industrial wastewater discharges. This is a significant action in response to the TMDLs you have adopted in the past, and so we did want to make a presentation on that. So I'd like Robert Schlitt to give the staff presentation.
Good morning, Chairman Mueller and members of the board. My name is Robert Schliff. I'm an engineer in the MPDS Wastewater Control Division. And this tentative order would reissue the watershed permit for mercury and PCBs that covers all municipal and industrial wastewater discharges to San Francisco Bay and its tributaries. The watershed permit implements the total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, for mercury and PCBs that the board adopted for San Francisco Bay. Before I discuss the tentative order and the comments that we receive, I want to provide some background. First, I would like to cover some basics on TMDLs. TMDLs are regulations that the board adopts to address water quality impairment and to restore clean water. Mercury and PCBs are pollutants that are impairing the bay's water quality, primarily through elevating concentrations in bay fish tissue, making many fish species unsafe to eat. Most of the sources are historic, such as from mercury mining and widespread PCBs usage. Factoring in the historic sources, the TMDL allocates current controllable sources, a set of loads, otherwise known as final waste load allocations, that aim to ultimately restore the bay's water quality and make all fish safe to eat. For San Francisco Bay, after board approval and subsequent approvals by the State Water Board, Office of Administrative Law, and US EPA, the mercury TMDL became effective in 2008, and the PCB's TMDL became effective in 2010. Now, the mercury TMDL granted municipal and wastewater treatment plants about 2% of all the sources to the bay and required that these facilities reduce their loadings by about 30%. The PCB's TMDL granted municipal and wastewater treatment plants about 20% of all the sources to the bay and required that these facilities maintain current performance. So currently, municipal and industrial wastewater discharges are well below their respective group allocations. For mercury, municipal and industrial wastewater are about 60% below their final waste load allocations. And for PCBs, municipal wastewater is about 50% below, and industrial wastewater is about 75% below their respective allocations. And this suggests that some of the measures that the board had anticipated, such as dental amalgam programs, may be helping to effectively control mercury sources. So now that I've covered some background information, I want to point out the most significant changes with this permit reissuance. First, this order would implement the final mercury limits for municipal wastewater 15 years ahead of schedule. And this is because they have already achieved the necessary reductions, and as I mentioned earlier, they are well below their final allocations. Second, this order would reduce the group mercury limit for industrial wastewater by about 20% because several discharges have ceased. And third, this order would focus PCBs monitoring to the 40 PCB congeners that are primarily responsible for fish impairment to reduce monitoring cost. So the most significant comments we received on the tentative order were from the Bay Area Clean Water Agencies, or BACWA. Specifically, BACWA has concerns with the reliability of PCBs data, and it also believes that the monitoring requirements included for PCBs are excessive relative to the loads contributed from municipal wastewater. In response, we believe that the proposed monitoring frequency for PCBs is necessary at this time. And while we recognize there are uncertainties with PCBs data collected to date, the monitoring requirements we propose are necessary because the PCBs TMDL requires tracking loads, and the method specified in the order is the best available to do so. Moreover, the US EPA has stated its expectation for us to refine performance-based effluent limits for PCBs in the next permit reissuance, and this will require a fair amount of data. So the other significant comment we received from BACWA concerns implementation of risk reduction programs. For background, the TMDLs require dischargers to support efforts to reduce mercury and PCB-related health risks to persons who consume bay fish. And this requirement is intended to support efforts to inform anglers and bay fish consumers about health advisories relating to consumption of certain bay fish that contain elevated levels of mercury and PCBs. And it was included in the TMDLs to address concerns about how long it may take for fish contamination concentrations to decline to safe levels. While BACWA supported efforts to initiate a program as part of their previous permit, in their comments they assert that risk reduction should not be in the purview of municipal wastewater treatment plants, and since this is a statewide issue, it should be handled on a statewide level. Therefore, they encourage the Water Board to work with public health agencies to develop an approach and funding apparatus for allocating responsibility for risk reduction programs. In response, we'd like to recognize that we believe the efforts funded under the first permit were indeed successful and a positive step forward in reducing risk. 40% of the targeted outreach locations now have signs in multiple languages, and a few mini-grants were awarded to focus outreach to persons most at risk. But additional work is needed and is still required as part of the TMDLs. And we have been working to continue to work closely with dischargers and the State Department of Health Services and the Office of Environmental Health and Hazard Assessment to support these efforts to seek additional funding mechanisms. So in terms of this permit, rather than requiring specific outputs, the language in the tentative order allows for collaborative efforts, such as those already conducted, to continue until the intent behind the TMDLs is fully realized. So, similar to how we handled the last permit term, we will be asking dischargers to submit a work plan describing how they plan to address this requirement, and we'll have them report back annually on progress. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Vice Chair.
All right. Now, when did we have a meeting when the Vice Chair didn't have questions? So, here we go. I'd wanted to draw your attention to Table 9, which appears on page 16 of the revised tentative order. I just wanted to confirm my understanding that in this table, item 3, III, the action plan, does not kick in unless the accelerated sampling determines that the initial triggers were not exceeded as a fluke in monitoring.
Yeah, that's correct. You would need two samples above to trigger the action plan.
Very good. I didn't want anyone to be confused on that issue. All right. Moving on to the bottom of the same page, with reference actually both to those action plans and to the source control program, I have two questions, and they relate to both of those issues. It's not clear to me from reading the permit at what point the executive officer or the staff approves the plans and timelines that are being submitted. In other words, you know, when do we say this is good enough or this is not good enough? And secondly, how do the permittees know in advance what criteria that the board staff is going to use to determine whether the plans are sufficient?
Yeah, well, this is really part of their pollution prevention program, so it's just folded into those annual reports. And there are, I believe, quarterly meetings with the Bay Area Pollution Prevention Group, which the Water Board has a representative that attends and offers guidance on what should be included for these sort of things. So that's where the feedback comes. So it's in those reports where they talk about what they've done, what they're going to do in the future, and then we do an annual review.
Okay, so it is specifically the annual reports, and then the communication happens on a more informal basis, not in the permit.
I'd even elaborate on that this is a mechanism to tie, as Robert says, to all the pollution prevention programs. If you can even note in your package on the Southern Marin, if you look on page 15, there are requirements for, very detailed requirements for the annual reporting for the pollution prevention program. And there it says for those constituents that have effluent limitations. Essentially, this builds on identifying PCBs and mercuries as being equivalent to those constituents that have effluent limitations that should be part of the pollution prevention plan. So this is the tie between the individual permit and the watershed permit. And to a certain degree, we feel this actually streamlines that of tying it into a single annual reporting mechanism rather than having a separate one for mercury PCBs here and everything else over here.
Mm-hmm. Well, as usual, I had complete confidence that you folks had everything under control. But this is part of my continuing effort to make sure that we are really clear about giving the public and the people who are not insiders the information that they need to have confidence in our efforts. And I guess you might consider in situations like this in the future putting something in Part F in the staff report that does specifically refer back to the provisions that are in all of the pollution prevention
reports.
We can
look at that wording, try to make it more robust.
It just helps people from the outside, I think, have more confidence in our deliberations. So thank you for that. Then I had a question that is probably born of my own confusion on the bottom of page 18 about the mass adjustments for the use of recycled water. In Part D, you know, there's a long explanation about how we're going to assess or look at compliance for the municipal dischargers, and I didn't find parallel language for industrial dischargers. My assumption is that the industrial dischargers just have their compliance judged by the monitoring results plus the adjustment. But I would have made the same assumption for the municipal dischargers, so I was confused to see a detailed explanation on one and not the other. And so,
well, this this addresses a situation we have right now with West County Agency in Richmond, where it is sending its treated effluent to the Richmond Chevron refinery, and saying, okay, how do we balance that? That could imply that there's increased mass from Chevron. They should not be penalized. In fact, we're trying to encourage recycling. And so this is a mechanism to say, okay, run the numbers, see if there's a problem, but we can come back to looking at the industrial plus the municipal to see if it exceeds the trigger. Now, we wouldn't expect it to go the other way. We wouldn't necessarily expect an industry to be sending its treated effluent to a municipality for recycling. In this case, it was coming from the municipality, so it's going essentially for the refinery throughput there. You don't have that at a municipal discharger. So should there be a situation like that, this provides a mechanism. In other words, we wouldn't come up with a different method necessarily, but I think this provides a roadmap should there be a situation, even though we can't conceive of there being a situation that it would go industrial to municipal. But again, this is a way to try to encourage recycling and not penalize parties for taking on what could be considered additional mass.
Yeah, no, I understand and appreciate very much the theory behind it all. The discussion confused me a little bit, but I will remain content to be in the slow learning group this morning and and we'll assume that you go folks got that one all right. Then I have one final question, and that is with respect to the requests by BACWA and some of their member agencies to change the monitoring requirements from the method 1668C. Can you clarify for everyone in the room what our options would be if we decided that as a result of the proposed split sample study that Palo Alto was doing, or as a result of any new information that came into EPA, you know, if we felt like we wanted to make some kind of a change mid-permit, what our flexibility is for doing that without reopening the whole permit? I mean, in other words, if we get some new information about the method and it's like 6 months from now, how are we going to address it?
Generally, we would address it. This is Lila Tang with the Water Board. I took the oath. We would address it through a minor modification of the permit, and that's pretty often applied to monitoring requirements, and the federal regulations have guidelines for what qualifies as minor modifications, and my sense is so long as we stay within those boundary conditions, we can do that. If it will entail something more significant, a more significant change, like stopping the monitoring, for instance, then we would have to take it back to the board for your consideration.
All right. Well, thank you for that reminder. That's it.
Any other comments from staff? And I'm not sure, did you want to speak to the item? I have no cards here.
I must have put it in the wrong place.
Okay. Unless I put it in the wrong place, but you're welcome to come forward, please.
Robert, how do I make this for a shorter person? Thank you. Okay. No, not yet. Good morning, Chair Mueller, members of the board. My name is Jim Kelly. I'm the interim executive director of the Bay Area Clean Water Agencies, and I did swear to tell the truth. I might add a caveat that's to the best of my memory, because part of what I want to do is give a historical perspective, brief, mind you, but historical nevertheless. If you go back about 15 years ago, there was a period in time which the EPA urged the region board to have no net increase.
Pull that mic up a little closer, please.
EPA urged the regional board to put in their permits no net discharge, which was inferring there might be a trading policy put in the future. And that started a period of time which the Bay Area Clean Water agencies started essentially appealing every permit, and that went on for about 4 years. We proceeded from there to a somewhat more collaborative effort where we agreed to study and put more money in to try to get a TMDL done. We got a TMDL done, and it went up to the state board, and it got remanded. And that was quite a dramatic hearing for me. First time to be to such a hearing where the remand where I had a personal stake in it. And we came back, and it got approved in 2006, and then, of course, this permit, I believe, was 2007. Many of those hearings had half this auditorium filled. In fact, the state board auditorium had people coming in from throughout the state to be there. So the fact that I'm the only person here speaking to this says volumes about how well this process has worked, what a good job your staff has done, from my perspective, to get through this to this point. There's a similar story that could be told about PCBs. There's questions about how did we get here. There was a time when this room was full of attorneys from New York with probably 50 banker's boxes each to tell you about how we have the data. It's not Jim probably sat, probably board member McGrath probably sat through some of this on the other side of the table, but we want to ask him to discuss that at this point. So just to get back, I wanted to specifically compliment working with the permit staff. Robert worked with us directly and allowed us access to data, which we reviewed thoroughly and had some comments on it. So I would like you to take my comments in perspective. These are comments of refining a process that's working well. It's not coming in and saying the system's broke, blah, blah, blah. The system's worked well. We're just trying to think, how do we take good next steps? And we basically had three comments, and I wanted to build on one comment that Board Vice Chair Williams brought up. The first comment we had was the method isn't quite ready for prime time yet. And the reason we're concerned about that is if you look at the Mercury TMDL, we went from what would have been imposed 15 years to now because we met the loading. That's using a very good method, a method that is repeatable, and if you split the sample, you think you're going to come up with the rest. You will come up with a pretty similar result. We've not had the same thus far with 1668. We've used two labs principally, and both of them seem to be okay, but they're not really certified because it's not an adopted method yet. One lab appears to yield lower results. So let's go 5 years down the road, and most of our agencies, let's pretend, have used the lab that gives the low results, then we could actually have our load limited, even though we don't know if those data are good or not. So that's just a fundamental concern that we've expressed. I think that's been recognized by the board staff. We do have two agencies that are going to take a very small look. I think it's like a three-sample look of split samples for each of the agencies. That's really not enough to say that this method's ready for prime time. So that is something that we are going to look at over the course of the next 4 years of data gathering, and we'll probably be revising what we're doing or approaching the regional board about what do you think we need to do to get to where we need to be. The second point was that the number of samples. We're asked to take 106 samples versus 16 for the stormwater. We're 20% of the load. They're 60% of the load. It is in the TMDL. We'll do it. We're just saying we'll be more vigilant next time when the TMDL is done to say, is there a way where we can do something that's representative? And then finally, with regard to risk reduction, we agree that this is a good approach. We're not really saying this needs to be changed now, but we're saying that within the 5 years, we'd like to look at a better way because it's not just fish from the bay. It's fish from almost every lake in the state. Almost every lake in the state needs to have a posting saying, this lake has fish that probably be high in mercury. And there's substantial interest in this, and we think progress will be made along that way in the next few years. That really concludes my comments. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you might have. But, again, this has been a positive process working with your staff, and we hope that this collaborative effort continues as we face even bigger challenges such as nutrients in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you. Yes, sir, board member.
How substantial an outlay are the risk reduction efforts that you just mentioned?
Probably not worth the amount of talking we did today. It's someplace around $20,000 a year. It is not a big outlay. I think Tom probably remembers it better than I do, but it's in that range. And I think it's more looking at what should we do, because the data is very frustrating. I just reviewed one of the reports, and essentially people read it. Maybe a third of them do something, two-thirds don't, and the third that do something with it will give the fish to the neighbor versus eat it themselves. So this is a work of
just the high mercury part.
Thank you.
This is the challenge that we've been facing is this. I use sort of colloquial term. This is not our bag. You know, like, but the Department of Public Health is that's the their budget has been going down during this period. So the amount of resources they've had to do any of this type of work is less now than it was when this project started. But you know, to do this comprehensively would cost quite a few dollars. That's the challenge. What would it be an effective risk reduction program actually cost? And then what is the relative responsibility and contribution of various players, and that's where it gets tricky.
Is there a consistency among the regional boards to have this kind of risk reduction effort, or is this?
We can claim we are number one, yeah. First, but as an outgrowth of our effort and the petition on the first TMDL package to the state board, particularly. State board member Tam, she was chair at the time, so she recognized the importance of this issue, and in the remand order back, called attention to emphasizing the need for this, but also called on the Central Valley Board to account for risk reduction in its efforts to produce a Delta Mercury TMDL. So the now Region 5, the Central Valley Board, has risk reduction requirements associated with its TMDL. So I believe we are the only two regions so far that have explicit requirements, but the issue is now being raised as brought out by Jim in consideration of reservoir TMDLs that are in play, and then there's obviously other waters with contaminated fish where the issue is, will be raised, I'm sure, from here on out. It's beginning of a statewide effort. Primarily, it's been localized because we took it on through our process.
Thank you, Tom. And I think just how fast it has gone, but how many years it's been in the process. I mean, just a little historical or hysterical point of view on TMDL. So it wasn't that long ago, really and truly, that this whole TMDL world just started. And if I remember correctly, in 96, Tom presented down in Palm Springs when we used to go to fund meetings, they were calling it Tom Munley's damn laws. You know what I mean? So it's proven, I think, to be effective. It has cost a lot of money, and it's put a lot of energy and time into them. But I think we're seeing results, and I guess that's what we're all about is data. As a vice chair, as a top world expert on data, and we're all learning how to understand data better. But we are making reductions.
Well, I think,
and we're making them faster than we were ever anticipated. It looks to me, and I think that's very
right.
Important.
And as Tom says, the risk reduction or risk management really isn't our bag. That we are able to focus much more on, okay, what is the reduction in loads and look at the metrics. Mm-hmm. But this was an area that as you recall, was very significant in terms of stakeholders. We had some stakeholders requesting that we provide alternative food supplies and things like
this.
And we said, okay, how can we make progress in this area of risk reduction, recognizing that the fish are not going to be safe to eat tomorrow? It's going to take some time. How can we make progress in the risk reduction while we're reducing the loading? And it's certainly been a challenge. I think we've made a lot of progress, but it's appropriate as we move forward. What is it we can do on a more statewide basis, more consistent basis, and do more collaborative fashion on this? So it's an ongoing challenge, and Jim's point of saying we need to look at this, you know, very in depth at the next permit cycle, I think we agree.
Yeah, maybe instead of the cap and trade world, we could be the plug and trade world or something. Plug those pipes up.
Yeah.
So any other further comments? Yeah, board member.
Jim, I appreciate your comments. The former discharger, I remember being asked to sample for dioxin. Not only was it extraordinarily expensive, what in the world is it going to tell us? I mean, we kind of knew that dioxin was coming mostly from burning plastics. Somebody burns plastic, it ends up on your property. You get a hit, you get a non-hit. You know, what does it tell you statistically? So I understand at a visceral level the kinds of concerns that are created by being asked to sample for PCBs on a method that's not reliable. And I guess I wanted to address that. But before I address that, I want to step back and say, I think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were kind of in the same position on mercury. I mean, I spent many years on the board of the San Francisco Estuary Institute and in the committee on pathways and loadings, trying to figure out how you identify where the sources still of concern are coming from, how to find them, and how to regulate them effectively. And it was information that I think was important to dischargers and to this board. Mercury, of course, is complicated because the toxic form is methylmercury, which is not commonly found but can be found and transformed in wetlands. And along the pathway of research towards better approaches to mercury, we discovered there's another form of mercury, reactive mercury. And there's ongoing debate that won't really be resolved about how much of the mercury loads we're dealing with come from historic sources like mining of mercury and processing of gold ore, and how much comes from burning of coal in other regions. But when we initially adopted the TMDLs for mercury, we didn't have precise information. And we took activities, and I will never forget the vice chair's comments, that our goal was to take the no-regret actions and to make sure that as we move forward that we had taken the minimum and we were gathering information to make sure that we weren't over-regulating. And I think with mercury, we've largely gotten there. We understand for both of these substances that the problems aren't coming from wastewater treatment plants. And that's, I think, a testimony to the quality of the treatment and the quality of the industrial pretreatment programs. So, but we have to get to a better level of precision with PCBs, and that does involve continuing to sample, even with a method that is not reliable, because the only way that that method will become more reliable is sampling. Now, I'm extraordinarily sympathetic and want to make sure that the staff understands that on the nexus basis you have made a very good point about the relative contributions of wastewater and stormwater runoff. And we do need to address that in some way, because the goal is not to take money from those entities that have a better structure for taking it from them, but to in fact get information with which to make good decisions on how to regulate PCBs effectively. But I would try to give you assurance that we have heard you on those issues, and we're not talking about something where the sketchy data or the data that needs to be improved is likely to or lead to any type of enforcement actions. And I think you've pointed out something which I hadn't thought about, but is important. We do want to make sure that if the data is biased by a testing method that underpredicts it, We don't clamp down on you and then find a more reliable method, and all of a sudden you have an allocation that comes down. I mean, that's certainly not my intent. And if I thought that was likely, I wouldn't go forward with this. I think our objective is to continue with no regrets activity and a reasonable level of sampling and monitoring, which will make sure that the next actions we take, we won't regret either by either over-regulating somebody that is a trivial source and not recognizing their contributions, or under-regulating somebody that's a major source. So I always appreciate well-thought-out comments, and I think we've heard you. But I also think the staff recommendation at this time is a solid one. So as soon as the executive director says we're ready, I will move that we go forward on that basis.
Yeah, before Jim, I think we'd all like to thank you for your years of interim service here and time of
it's going on. Yeah. But thank you very much.
No, in your sharing of your expertise with everyone. So thank you.
I really like to second that, because Jim has been very helpful and spearheading, because he was a key player when we began
the we transitioned from butting heads to joint fact finding, collaborating. Let's get smart by gathering information wisely and making good decisions. So that this transition has turned into a great relationship. We still are the regulator. They're still the regulatee. But we're much more informed, and we're so fortunate to have a progressive publicly owned treatment works community in the Bay Area. That's why we aren't very prescriptive on those source control requirements, because they are a step ahead of us. So if that were to fall apart, that would be an issue, but we have no reason whatsoever to believe that collaborative spirit is going away. It's just getting better and better through our ongoing dialogue. And we meet, the executive team meets, and our management team meets with the BACWA folks on a regular basis, so we have early opportunity to raise any issues before they fester into something significant. So that's why we have essentially a consent item that we just wanted to use to inform you.
Thank you, and thanks again, Jim. Remember what I said earlier, we'll fine you 1 month and give you a plaque the next, so don't worry. Let's hope we can give you more plaques.
I think I've been on both ends.
So at this time, Executive Officer's recommendation, please.
As part of my recommendation, I will note that on Attachment B of the permit, on B1, we will make a modification there. Sewerage Agency of Southern Marin, we just adopted the permit, so we will fix that entry in there and have their now current permit that we just adopted a few minutes ago. And unfortunately, as I was looking at that page, I noted a typo that we will fix, that we listed as East Bay Municipal Utilities District. It's actually utility, not utilities, so we'll fix that. So with that minor change to the permit, I'd recommend adoption of it.
So moved.
Second.
Yeah, it's been moved and second with the minor changes. Any further discussion? Vice Chair?
I would just like quickly to add my voice to complimenting the discharger community on both their efforts that are allowing us to meet our deadlines early, but also the way they go about it. We are very fortunate, as you said. I also wanted to compliment the staff. There are several notable things, I think, in this permit that we didn't discuss a lot today, but the fact that we have an inclusion of trigger levels that allow us to see that there if there is a problem coming down the road and take corrective actions before it gets to be a compliance problem, that's terrific. I like the inclusion of the adjustments for recycled water use and for any of the POTWs that will take storm water. That's very, forward thinking, and I appreciate it very much. And I also appreciate that we can make changes in the monitoring requirements to save people money when it's warranted. So on all those on all those arenas. I'd like to compliment the staff and thank you for your work.
Thank you. And Mary, this will be your last roll call vote for your career, so thank you for your service, and we wish you well, and you may call the roll, please.
Board Member
Aubrey
Miller.
Aye.
Aye.
Board Member McGrath.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
Aye, thank you. And I think that concludes our...
We don't have any closed session. We may have a closed session next month, but with that, that's all.
Thank our visitors from Sacramento for coming down, and Tim, and wish everyone a happy holiday season. We will see you all in January 13.
Yeah, very soft.
So everybody on the control.